Blog Talk Radio.
Share. Welcome to the Ron and Don Show here on Saturday morning. My name is Don Allen. The Studio A and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Good morning, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good morning to both of you. Good morning to both of you, Don.
Yeah.
I stand. You have the state representative, Ray Dean, on, and I know y'all have been talking and et cetera. So why don't you, you know, start it out, let him a little bit. Let's talk about whatever it is that you want to talk about, and he wants to talk about, more importantly. Go ahead.
Oh, sure. Exactly. You know, about 2 weeks ago, we had a candidate, Lacey Johnson, who is running for 59B, if I'm not mistaken, and also running against him is current incumbent state representative of the DFL, Ray Dean. And so I thought, Mr. Edwards, it was more than appropriate to invite State Representative Dean on the show because he is a friend of the show. He has called many times in the past, and we just want to get an update, find out about his campaign, some of the issues here, and what's going on. So I'd like to welcome State Representative, Minnesota State Representative Ray Dean to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine. How you doing, Don? And hey, Ron, how you doing?
Real good, Ray. Real good.
Good.
Well, you know, you're into the thick of this campaign season, and I guess we want to get an update on what's going on, and we will have some questions for you, I'm sure, but why don't you take a minute or so, or 30 seconds, a minute, and introduce yourself and,
sure,
tell us a little bit about your campaign. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, thank you guys for having me on the show. It's, of course, the height of campaign season with the elections just over 5 weeks away, so the campaign's out connecting with folks, knocking on doors, talking to them about, you know, what's going on in the community as well as what's going, you know, what's at stake in this election at the state level. You know, we have the governorship and all the constitutional officers as well as the whole House of Representatives in the state is up, as well as at the federal level. And we have, you know, two U.S. senators up in Minnesota, too. So it's a pretty big election. And we're trying to make sure that folks, one, get out and vote. Two, ideally, we'd love it if they were really informed on the issues. And I would just say that, you know, it's been an honor to serve the district the past three terms. And if the voters are willing, I'll be back in there come this January.
You mentioned about the issues. I mean, what are you hearing out there? I mean, I have questions. One of them might be back in loaded, but what are some of the issues that are important to the voters in your area, in your district, that you are hearing repeatedly?
Well, you know, I have a very unusual district in that I have all of downtown Minneapolis and the southern part of North Minneapolis, so I hear different things in different parts of the district. I think that some of the economic opportunity issues and people having access to health care, education is always a huge, huge topic. And, you know, people are just, they're really, really frustrated that it appears that everything is going well. And at the same time, they don't see themselves getting ahead or things structured for them to actually have real opportunities. While when I, you know, am downtown, oftentimes the discussion is around property taxes and other things like that. So it's very, very different discussion. One thing that is common is the cost of housing, and that the cost of housing has actually become very, very unattainable for a lot of people. And when I say that, it's not just, you know, it's folks all along the economic spectrum. The cost is going up, and people are just having a little trouble dealing with that.
Okay. State Representative Dean, I've known you for a long time.
I even
go as far as call you a friend, because you're one of the few people that have always shook my hand, talked to me, gave me information if I asked for it, and it wasn't like a standoff thing. Like I have a relationship I have with Senator Bobby Joe Champion and Jeff Hayden and a couple of the people over there at the state capitol. It's not because I want to have that kind of relationship. That's just how they choose to approach me. So with that said, we've been going through a repeat cycle. This is my own opinion. We've been going through this repeat cycle in not necessarily downtown, but in the district where we have a high number of people of color from all walks of life. And especially in that North Minneapolis area, your area, the area that you serve. If elected again, how will you be more intentional to address the issues of housing, economic development? I mean, we've heard for years that XYZ is going to happen. The Northside funders put out a report a while back that said to lift North Minneapolis, your area, off the grid of purgatory and lack of employment and things like that, that they would have to find sustainable work, jobs, career-type things for 7,000 people. Has anybody approached you with a plan that might be proactive and actually do that to kind of change the dynamics of North Minneapolis without gentrification and changing the makeup of the neighborhood? Has there been a plan? Do you know anything out there, and what are your efforts going to be if elected after November? Or in November?
Yeah, well, I think there are lots of people that have plans. You know, the difficulty with a plan, of course, is you have to have the resources with it. And I think that that's been where we've been lacking a lot. And part of that is, you know, public agencies or, you know, government is not likely to fund someone that has a plan unless they have a proven track record and X number of years of experience and all those other types of things. The qualifications to get access to some government resources is oftentimes a huge, huge burden. I think that, you know, some of the groups that have sprung up, whether it's Northside's Funders Group or other folks, have been trying to coalesce on what that really, really means and how we can get people engaged. You know, my plan is going to be very different based on what happens November 6th. If we are fortunate to come back in the majority in the House with the DFL having majority of seats, well, then I'll be working directly to try to make sure we get the resources, you know, for entrepreneurship, for job training, for what I've always talked about, you know, my whole time in public service, impacting the physical environment, you know, the places where people live, creating a uplifting space. So that means working along Broadway. It means making sure that, you know, people's housing is quality housing. And I'll be able to play a large role if we're in the majority. If we're not in the majority, that means that I'll be working with folks at the county and folks at the city to try to make sure that they're focusing those resources into those areas.
Okay, that's very interesting that you say that. So what that says to me, looking at the blind spot, is that if you're not the majority, there wouldn't be – I mean, are you saying that there's no collaboration if the Republicans remain the majority, or is there some collaboration, some dual paths that guide along the same problem-solving skills with your colleagues?
Yeah.
On the other side of the aisle?
No, you know.
How's that?
I mean, I've collaborated across the aisle, you know, my whole time. And that's, you know, one of the fortunate things of representing this district and working with other individuals or other legislators that are in, like, strong Republican districts. We can collaborate. And, you know, I know there'll be some resources. But I'm talking about it's time that we get transformational resources. You know, I often hear people talk about all the millions of dollars that have come to the North Side to try to have an impact on changes. And when you look at the period of time versus how much money it's come, and then you just give an example in South Minneapolis. I mean, the city and other folks invested over $80 million into Midtown Exchange. Chicago and Lake, had a huge, huge impact. I bet if you look closely over the past 10 years, you'd be not even close to $80 million as far as the resources that have come to the north side. So I often talk about the resources that we've been getting on the north side have just been to maintain the status quo. And my thought is, if the Republicans happen to be in the majority, it's going to be a real fight for resources for our community. Not that I won't keep fighting, but I'll also be looking at those other areas where we can have an impact as well. You guys still there?
Yeah.
I'm here. Yeah, I'm right here. I'm right here.
Oh,
someone.
Don must have been getting a phone call.
You know how it goes.
Go ahead, Don. Go ahead, man.
You know how it goes, Mr. Edwards. People are texting. I'm saying you got to call in. I'm not taking the text. So I'm letting them know they have to call into the show.
Let me just say this to Ray. You're not through yet, Don. I know you got. I can tell you got some well crafted questions there. But no. But one of the policies we have here, Ray, is that want to ask the question, want an answer. It's their responsibility to call in and stand up and do that. So we don't. I don't under any circumstances take any kind of text message to ask questions of a guest. So, but go ahead, Don, because I know you got some other questions that you want to ask.
And I don't either. Yeah, and I have two more questions and then maybe a follow-up after I pass over to Mr. Edwards, just depending on, because I know you have a limited amount of time here for your engagement. But we've heard for at least since 2006 these resources coming into North Minneapolis. And if you look at from a county, you had mentioned working with the county and city. We already know that the Hennepin County spends about $1 billion a year from people 12 to 21. We know that since 2008, there's probably been over $80 million in grant money distributed to the over 200 nonprofits. Well, not all of them, but trickle-down theory. They give it to one main one like Emerge, and Emerge might engage someone. West Broadway Business Coalition might engage with people. Now we have the RECAS money, and I really don't see any results from that. So I think the money, the resources are there, but how do we guide this in a meaningful way, in a sustainable way? I guess my issue, and I'll let you answer the question here, my issue is that when I go over to North Minneapolis, I see the same thing. When I go over to South Minneapolis, I see different things happening. Downtown, of course, different things happening. But North Minneapolis seems to be a petri dish of nonprofit disparities that you could fill a grant out from everyone from MnDOT to the Minneapolis Foundation, and someone that someone knows that might be politically correct usually gets the money. So how do we stop this partisan giving and people feel it's more of a social club? How are we intentional? Like the Northside Funder report said, let's get 7,000 people jobs in North Minneapolis and the unemployment rate will go from double digit to the mainstream of 6.3%. Now it's somewhere up around close to 40, according to city data. I mean, I know you're just one person, but how can we fix this?
Well, I think the fixing it is going to take some time. All the factors that play into a community like the North Side is not simple. I mean, I can guarantee you employing 7,000 people will have an impact. But we also need to make sure that there's stable housing, that those jobs are jobs where people will have access to health care and all those other types of things. We're seeing some change. I mean, we're seeing some public investment and we're seeing some private investment. And it's those types of investments that are going to have an impact. Now, the question I always ask is it a transformational impact? And mm-hmm. you know, when you talk about, you know, the grant money that's come into the community, you know, some of that is, you know, public money and some of it's from private foundations and other areas where resources come from. And, you know, folks have to be working together, which means folks have to be communicating. And I would say that far too often the people at the table aren't the people at the table that are directly impacted. And we need to make sure that those voices are at the table when decisions get made about how resources are allocated. And that's not an easy thing to do. You know, folks have jobs. Folks are trying to get by. And, you know, whether you schedule a meeting in the day, whether you schedule a meeting in the evening, whether you schedule a meeting on the weekend, there are going to be some people that aren't going to be there. So I think it's a continual effort that has to take place. And, you know, I actually think things are changing, Don. I mean, I'm seeing people step up and do things that people that haven't done stuff in the past. So I'm optimistic.
Okay, my last question before I pass over to Mr. Edwards is about education. This is a twofold question. Are you on any education committees? And based on the recent data that just came, well, it didn't just come out. It came out at the beginning of the school year. The schools within a mile of the Cub Foods, within a half a mile of the Cub Foods in North Minneapolis. I don't mean to bring Cub Foods into this, but I need a target point so we can do what pilots call dead reckoning. The schools in that area have been doing poorly. We have everybody from fifth graders to 12th graders doing poorly as far as the skill sets they need to go out and participate in America's Best Workforce, which is a push by the state and a couple other folks there at the Minnesota Department of Education. Are you interested or have you approached to look not only at the teachers' corps in Minneapolis public schools from a state perspective, maybe partnering with Senator Eric Pratt or one of those folks on the education committee, or do you see yourself getting involved in this next legislative session to kind of address who's in the room, what the students are learning, the curriculum, or is that out of your purview? Go ahead, please.
Well, yeah, I mean, to answer your first question, I am not on any education committee. So my engagement is, you know, as a legislator, peripherally, when I see issues that are critical, of course, I step up and get involved in that conversation. I want to challenge you a little bit on what's happening in the schools, because in the city of Minneapolis, the scores are going up. Now, we can break that down school by school, and we might see that the aggregate is going up, but some schools are still suffering. And I think that we need to have a lot more effort. The frustrating thing that I've seen at the Capitol is for some folks, when schools aren't doing well, they want to take resources away from it. Well, if you take resources away from a school that's not doing well, guess what? It's going to do worse. So I think we need to talk about what are the resources that we're bringing into the community, because I'll tell you, you know, we can keep throwing money in the classroom and it'll have a negligible impact, or we can start putting money into public safety. We can put money into housing. We can make sure that, you know, people in the families that are, you know, parents have jobs. I mean, there are other resources we can deliver to assist education and a child's ability to learn beyond just the classroom. So I've always been a big fan of talking about we need to do these wraparound services that are so important. You know, Brooklyn Center's had an actual really positive effect by doing full-service community schools where they bring in those resources actually into the schools, whether it's health clinics, whether it's, you know, where people might apply for government assistance, because it makes it much, much easier for the family so they don't spend a lot of time, you know, in transportation or having to deal with a system that's in six different places.
All right. Thank you. Our caller number is 347-426-3904. That number again is 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, questions for our guest.
Yes, Tom, thank you. Good morning, State Representative. I want to go, by the way, Don's questions are real well-crafted and such. It's kind of like you guys even talked before you came in. You've got a Republican challenger who we had on this program a couple of weeks ago. He apparently gave Don some information that wasn't correct about his portfolio, Mr. Johnson, but we won't go in that direction. Let this be positive. So I've got a different kind of set of questions and want to hear your observation. Because Don didn't touch on anything dealing with public safety. Obviously, public safety is a real tough issue in this legislative district in the north side in the entire city of Minneapolis. Now, we had an incident last night again, police officer discharged his weapon, and et cetera. I assume the Star Tribune or the leadership will talk about it. No one was hit, but people were taken into custody, guns were involved, and et cetera. What is your plan as it pertains to the public safety issues? And if you would, start with the whole problem of both guns and drugs, and what do you see in your conversations with your colleagues on both sides of the aisle and with the heads of the so-called departments, particularly the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, even the constitutional officers like the Attorney General, and we really don't want to get into that campaign. So on the issue of public safety, making the streets safe, if you will, guaranteeing that a child doesn't go to sleep every night hearing gunfire, what is, and by the way, because Don had pointed out that you have a previous game, so how much time do you have to give us at this point? Another 4 or 5 minutes?
Well, I probably only have like 10 minutes in the
okay,
question
and I think
that you.
I'll take that and because Mr. Allen had a good opportunity to dialogue with. So back to the question. And when you get to the last minute or so, you know, just indicate that you have to break away. And I'll certainly understand.
Sure.
So talk to us a little bit about public safety and starting with drugs and guns.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's you know, folks need to realize that it is a reality that, you know, the intersection of guns and drugs on the north side caused lots of problems for us. It makes the community less safe. Unfortunately, in some ways, it's a lot of young men that are getting caught in that cycle. And, you know, we're losing those young men, not just for what they can do today, but what they're going to be able to do in the future. Now, I've often talked about, you know, the issue about, you know, the solution I don't believe is more police. Now, how we police, I think, is important. Now, at the state level, we don't have a lot to do directly with, you know, the operations of policing in the community, although we do give funding for certain types of training for officers. We did that a couple of years ago with $12 million. That would focus in on training for officers around cultural competency, which includes implicit bias, officers identifying mental health and mental illness situations. So, you know, I mean, we're and also de-escalation training. So when an officer comes to a situation, they're not doing what they typically have been done. And that's if you have any force, you meet force with more force. The escalation.
Let me ask you this question because you only have about 8 minutes left. And
sure.
Have you ever been invited by the department, by the mayor? Both of you are the same political parties. Have you ever been invited to attend some of these sessions, to listen to them, the bias and those sessions? Have you had a chance to sit in any of those sessions in your going on over 6 years as state representative?
Well, not any of those sessions, and those sessions, like I said, have just started in the past couple of years. Definitely something that would be interesting because I've heard that some of those sessions are really effective and some of those sessions aren't that effective, and some officers respond really, really well to that type of training and instructions, and some officers don't. I mean, Minneapolis has a police force of over 800.
Let me ask this question. In the last year, have you had a chance to meet with the interim police chief, Larry Arredondo? Have you had a chance to meet with him, sit down, talk in terms of policing problems in your constituent base? Have you had a chance to sit down with him?
I've sat down with him 2 times since he's been named the interim chief.
And when was that?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it was probably, what month is it now? It's September. I would say that it was back in March or April. And then I sat down with him back in July to have a conversation. You know, I've had, I wouldn't say hardcore conversations with the commander at the 4th Precinct, but, you know, we've definitely talked at events.
Now, that's Commander Beard. Is that Beard you're talking about?
Yeah.
Those two. You had conversations with Beard. You had conversations with interim chief Arredondo. Okay. Talk to me a little bit about and the listening audience, which I hope contains some of your significant base. Talk to us a little bit about the trucks, because it seems to be flourishing. I don't remember a bust, if you will, a sting operation or a significant arrest of who, quote unquote, the big drug dealers are. Do you remember any roundup of those that are coordinating drug activities in Minneapolis and in the North Side?
Well, I don't think that, you know, and I'm sort of speaking what I don't know, which is always dangerous. But I haven't seen any, you know, big sting operations in Minneapolis proper, and I don't know if that's what their efforts are right now, to do that type of activity. I think that, you know, they might tell you that they don't have enough officers to do those types of things. I would tell you that, you know, if you're out in the community, if you're out talking to folks, that's when you actually find out that type of information. So it's a chicken and the egg kind of thing. And I think that, you know, I mean, I don't know, and you might know this, Ron, off the head, top of your head, that there are large caches of drugs actually in Minneapolis proper. I mean, if I had to bet, I think that if we went out to some of the outer suburbs, we might actually find where those large caches of drugs
are.
Why,
certainly.
Yeah. Yeah,
but But the effect is pertains to public safety and public health. Sheriff Rich Stanek, who is running for re-election and will be re-elected, was really one of the first politicians, because that's really what Rich is, a politician as well as sheriff. He started talking about the opiate problem, drug problems, and et cetera. Do you concur with some of his observations and some of the programs? He just had a meeting here a couple days ago with law enforcement from other jurisdictions and et cetera. How do you evaluate, how do you grade what Rich Stanek has been doing in the area of the problem of drugs, opiates, and addiction?
Well, you know, placing opioids and dealing with the addiction are kind of two very different things. And, you know, the resources they take are very different in very different ways. I think that we've seen that opioids have gotten a lot of attention recently because not only the number of overdoses, but also the community that it's beginning to affect.
What do you mean when you say that? Are you talking in terms that there's some racial aspect?
Absolutely. I mean, I was going to say the mortgage foreclosure crisis, you know, hit North Minneapolis and the communities of color long before it hit, you know, sort of the white communities. But the attention didn't come until after it hit the white communities. And I think we're seeing the same thing with opioids, which is both, you know, sad, but it's also kind of finally, you know, people are paying attention. You know, as far as I don't know specifically what the sheriff is planning as far as policing, but I know there was lots of conversations last year at the Capitol about dealing with the issues around opioids in the community, but the resources weren't brought to it. So, you know, we need to make sure, you know, financially the state's doing well, so we need to make sure that those resources are actually coming to those places that they need. And I'm going to have to probably take off here in about 60 to 90 seconds.
Well, certainly. I figured that you would. Appreciate you taking the time, Representative, and the best of luck. All right, Don, handing back to you.
Hey, thank you, State Representative, Minnesota State Representative Ray Dean, for calling us this morning. Good luck on the campaign trail, and we look forward to talking to you again after the election, win, lose, or draw. Let's see what happens.
Well,
thank you, sir.
Happy to, Don, and thanks for having me on.
Okay, we appreciate it. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
Okay, bye.
All right. Go ahead, Don. So, Give that phone number out to see if anybody was listening or reception. Give that phone number, and then you said you want to talk a little bit about Kavanaugh and some other things. We move into the last half hour of this morning's program, actually the last 25 minutes. Go ahead. Why don't you give that number again, Don, so people got the number in case they want to call in, got any kind of questions, you know.
Sure. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. And we do have a caller. We're going to get that caller if I go into my missive. Caller, it looks like a friend of the show. Mr. M, how are you, sir?
Greetings, gentlemen. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's you and Mr. Edwards, you know, you gentlemen have really almost become like my weekly therapy session so that I can kind of do from the week.
You
and
should
actually,
be paying us
really a good thing. It's actually a good thing to do it on Saturday morning. You know, you decompress from the week and kind of relax, wind down, and try to get into next of this winding, rolling, you know, issues in this great Twin Cities that a gentleman had at one point described as Twin Cities as the great Shangri-La.
Now, yes, that's what I used to call it, Shangri-La. Right. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, as I look at this, you know, the city, one of the first things that I really enjoyed the last caller, and I really hope that, you know, he's able to really, you know, make an impact in our community for the African-American community, which is, you know, from what we're seeing, we could use all the help we can get.
Yes. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know, on the national scene, there's so many things I almost don't almost don't know where to start.
Let me start it for you. You think Kavanaugh will be confirmed? Let's do it that way. You think Kavanaugh will be confirmed?
Yes, I do. I think that
I concur. Mm-hmm.
I think that this is a dog and pony show. I think the sincerity of 45 is in question. I really do. And okay, well, we'll appease the masses by having a short investigation, a perfunctory investigation, if you will, according to, you know. And I think he will be. I think he'll be breezed in. I think they'll have a vote. It'll be done. And I think they're going to do what they want to do.
Let me interject in that. Since you're talking about that, Em, and Mr. Edwards. Now, I didn't get a chance to watch any of it except for little clips that I saw on YouTube and the news, but I had a chance to read a lot of it. And the state that our country is in, this divide, this major divide of hate and dislike for number 45 and for anything Republican, it is atrocious at this point. But what I'm looking at is how this judge – you know, there's a little white privilege going on there, of course, but how this judge, how do you go back to those relationships in high school and judge the person that he is today? And I would say this for anybody, yellow, red, black, or white. How can you go back in a development stage? In the courts, you cannot even bring a juvenile's record into his adult stuff. It's sealed after they get 18 for the most part. And I found this very dysfunctional, this whole hearing piece. And I'm not taking any away from the alleged victims. But for them to waste the American public time with this dog and pony show, I think was, again, atrocious, number one. And to go back that far to high school, we're forgetting that people develop. There's a saying, boys will be boys, girls will be boys. There's parties, there's house parties, there's things that you go to. You know, I was a little bit disgusted with the whole premise that they were setting this up on, and just wondered how the attack on men is growing really huge, but also the attack on youth experience is even getting larger. So how, if someone wants to run for office and say that when they were 13, they happened to be in a space where there was another female that they might have did something inappropriately, they might have both had consent and done whatever, and then this person is adult in their 50s or 60s, and they're running for office, and this person feels slighted because she can't or he can't stand number 45, so it stopped the Republican in any way possible, by any means necessary. And this turns into what we go ahead, please.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Em. What do you think about
Mr. Allen, no, I agree with everything you said except for one thing. You know, the attack on 45, and I think 45 has brought everything on himself. I mean, his behavior, his leadership, his inability to communicate to the public, to the world, to be a laughingstock in front of the whole world at the United Nations. I mean, he's brought a tenor. He's brought something over, a cloud, in my opinion, over this whole issue. If we had a president, someone that people at least could rally behind a little bit more than this current president. I mean, his behavior personally, and you can disagree with me, or anybody can disagree with me, but I think that his leadership has caused this overall stench that people are trying to dance around and get around. I mean, he wants his selection to be, you know, in this Supreme Court. I mean, we have,
let me say this, because it's interesting to listen to my colleague indicate dissatisfaction and disappointment with the length of time. Now, we just saw the other hand. We just got through sending what was at one time a very popular American who happened to be black. We just sent him to the penitentiary for at least a minimum of 3 years.
Yeah.
And the timeline was not as long as it was with Judge Kavanaugh, and that was, you know, of course, Bill Cosby, and then Don had indicated you want to kind of touch on that. Now, we had no problem going back 20, 25 years with Bill Cosby. In fact, had two trials, even though it was a hung jury the first time, but, you know, the state of the Commonwealth, as they're called in Pennsylvania, put him on trial again. And he will die. He will die in the penitentiary, no doubt about it. But if we could go back on somebody like Bill Cosby 20, 25 years ago, I mean, wow. I mean, is it so difficult to go back on Kavanaugh? And, you know, I don't buy the doctrine that he was 17, and he was 17, he wasn't 13 or 14 years old, he was 17 years old. He was at a very prestigious collegiate college there in D.C. and the Sephora. And so the thing I try to do, though, is that, you know, none of us were raped. You understand what I'm saying, gentlemen? None of us have been raped, and so we don't know what the fallout from that is. But one of the things, and Don, you just said it, unfortunately, you did not have a chance to watch the hearings. I did. I make it a point to do that. And the moment that really caught my attention with Judge Kavanaugh and his demeanor and et cetera was the angry display that, and it was well orchestrated. I mean, I give him credit, between him and Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator from South Carolina, and Judge Kavanaugh. When they went off, I mean, you know, they came close to just going to curse, if you will. I mean, Lindsey Graham red in the face and et cetera. But it was Kavanaugh who is supposed to have, you know, some demeanor. But I understand the angle. I understand the angle that his family has been hurt and injured and et cetera. No one seemed to be concerned about Dr. Ford. The mistake they made, Don, with Dr. Ford is that she is an expert in the same field, and it was, and I'll close it on this, it was really a joke to watch the so-called examination of her by a single individual brought in from Maricopa County at prosecutor's office, which is Phoenix, Arizona, to do the questioning for 11 white men, all Republicans, who didn't have the guts, particularly this close to a midterm election, to at least cross swords with the good doctor. But I asked the question. I appreciate your candor and honesty there, Em. You're absolutely right. Old boy's going to make it, because you already know me. Come on, guys. we already know the FBI has been told what their limitations will be on any one-week examination of Judge Kavanaugh, if you will, and they're going to come back with a clean bill of health. And by the way, you know, there was more than one woman. There were other women, if you will, and, you know, statements have been made that you can't trust anything that a woman says, and et cetera. But let me say this. One thing we can be guaranteed, many women, and I think far more than the Republicans anticipated, are going to make a determination at the ballot box, which could shift control from both the House of Representatives and the Senate, if you will, to the Democratic Party, and that'll be interesting. But, see, I come from the old school. I watched the hearings on Anita Hill from Blasey Ford, was treated with a certain level of consideration as a white woman, something that Anita Hill didn't get back in 1991.
Ooh.
I'd like to chime in quickly
on, you know, the nuances of the Cosby case. I mean, from what I understand, that case with the Constantine person had gone to court previously, or at least there had been a settlement to the tune of nearly $4 million that she was paid.
And a confidentiality agreement. You're absolutely right, sir.
Confidentiality. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it looked like that particular issue had been settled between the parties for whatever was right, whatever was wrong. I mean, that's not for us to really say, but it looked like it had been settled. But yet, you know, the picture of Mr. Cosby as a, you know, 80-plus, you know, 81. Man, you know, with a real history of contributions to this country and to African Americans, to be led away in chains. I mean, you actually saw him with chains wrapped around his body and chains on his wrists. I just think that was just a poignant picture to actually see, for the country to actually watch this man be led away in chains like that. I just, I don't know.
Let me ask this question to him, and I appreciate the, at least your candor on that. And didn't want to ask Representative Dean the question because it was too politically charged, if you will. What is your take, sir, on the Attorney General's race? And what is happening with regard? The reason I'm going to give you a narrative that everyone is trying to keep secret right now on Keith Ellison, because there were two meetings, gentlemen, this week, and that's what the Ron and Don program is supposed to be about, to keep information out there. There were two meetings, 2 days apart, where there was a great divide amongst our black leadership in a meeting at the Alfred Babington Johnson's operation, Stair Step. I mean, some of the leaders of the African-American community tore into Congressman Ellison. Of course, he pushed back. He charged a couple of folks out of St. Paul with being hypocrites, talking in terms of their lack of support for Melvin Carter, if you will. I mean, it was a knockdown, drag out. And then 2 days later, there was a luncheon board of the congressman for attorney general, state attorney general, at one of our Northside churches. How dangerous, in your mind, in your estimation, is this conflict that is going on with regards to the candidacy of Congressman Keith Ellison?
Well, you just, again, you know, my therapy session, I almost should be laying on my couch as I listen to this program. I don't know what to say about the Ellison situation. I mean, I think we get back into the old he said, she said.
He said, she said, yes.
Mm-hmm. But also, I think I'm really kind of somewhat disappointed in our African-American political leaders. I mean, I don't see, okay, closed-door meetings, community meetings, that's okay. But, for example, I was at, they had a picnic here. Every year they have what's called a Southside Picnic at Phelps Park, 39th and Clinton,
right.
Chicago.
Okay.
And I really like that because you really get a lot of the just people that lived in this community forever that come and gather. And so, at this particular one last night, I saw one of our representatives, Andrea Jenkins.
Mm-hmm.
She was there. And, I mean, came in, and I hope this isn't taken negatively, I mean, but flaming red dress, red high heels. I mean, it was more of a, I don't know, a modeling type of a session as opposed to, you know, really mingling with the people and talking about what are you doing for the community, how are we doing, where are we at?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess
mm-hmm.
I have a fundamental just problem with our current African-American leadership. And, you know, let's face it. I mean, Mr. Ellison has been very high profile in the Democratic Party for a number of years. And I
mm-hmm.
think with that being said, there's going to just be a lot of darts thrown at him from the other side just because of that. I think it's somewhat confusing to me why he would step down from a Senate position to come and be Attorney General of the state of Minnesota. It doesn't seem.
Let me just be absolutely clear for our audiences. It
sure.
wasn't a Senate. It was a House of Representatives. I want to be clear on that. He's not a senator. He's a United States Representative. Let me tell you what I'm aware of, that one of the reasons he stepped down. If you notice the Congressional Black Caucus, and we have about 5, 6, 7 minutes. If you notice, the Congressional Black Caucus never said anything when the congressman, who is still, quote-unquote, a member of that body, came under attack, and some people kept asking the question, why? Well, you know, I've talked about it, is that there was a serious falling out with regards to Congressman Ellison and members, particularly older females in the Congressional Black Caucus, and I'll leave it at this particular point, because there certainly needs to be balance, because we're a little bit beyond he said, she said. Now, the word is that because of conflict within the Congressional Black Caucus, that the congressman was, let me put it like this, gentlemen, it's like the concept of the old British tradition of the white feather and the gun, when they would lay the white feather on the desk in your study and a gun, and that was to indicate that you had lost the confidence of your peers and to blow your brains out, right? You know what I'm saying? And I'm like you. When there was that sudden move to drop out of a safe race, at least for this term, though I maintained it would have been, it'd be different in 2020. When I saw that, I knew that information and et cetera that had been forthcoming about a serious fallout inside of the Black Congressional Caucus, as well as the what some of his supporters, he being Congressman Ellison, felt was a double cross. When he thought that he was going to ascend to the position of chair of the Democratic National Committee. Now, we kind of touched on that very briefly on this program a year ago. But there was a lot to that also, and there were some deep wounds, and others listening that did not heal, if you will. But what's happened now is this battle that's going on amongst Black leadership in our beloved community, in which some folks got up and walked out and said it was a bunch of BS supporting Keith Ellison and et cetera, which then led to a serious confrontation over the fact that there were people in the room from Mill Penn out to St. Paul that did not support Melvin Carter's candidacy. But once Melvin Carter won, they had no problems in of going to the gala, if you will, and dancing and smiling and et cetera. And I think it's that kind of politics that is weakening the fiber of our beloved community.
Yeah.
So just kind of share that, which unfortunately phone lines aren't, is not enough time, if you will. But if people want to remember it, want to call in next Saturday, if we're on, I'll certainly be happy to address it.
Well, I would like to ask another question, saying absorbing this information, you know, it's almost like, Mr. Edwards, I have to tell you, sometimes you have to give this to the people in smaller doses, because this becomes information to try to digest all at once. But I do have a follow-up question to what you said, if I could.
Uh-huh.
And that, you know, the Congressional Black Caucus, does it consist uh-huh. of purely Democratic members?
No, the two, three Republicans, that the two in the House, one of the sister out of Utah, and another one out of Alabama, and the black the United States Senator, Brother Scott, out of South Carolina, are always automatically under the bylaws of the Congressional Black Caucus. They have a right to be there, and I understand that they have participated in some sessions and et cetera. But of course, obviously, and I saw some data last night on CNN about who really controls what. It's kind of scary. But anyways, to your specific question, yes, the three African-American Republicans in the Congress of the United States are members, are card-carrying members of the Congressional Black Caucus. As I said before, that's built into their bylaws.
Okay. Well, I would have one more statement. I know you're getting towards the end. But, you know, when you refer to Mr. Carter in St. Paul, I mean, wasn't he overwhelmingly elected? I mean, wasn't he?
Yes,
didn't he gather enough?
Means him, that
had,
means that our leaders aren't able to diagnostically take a look at a situation. In other words, they can't read the tea leaves very well. They should have known that and understood that, particularly after the St. Paul Police Federation tried to do a number on him. It really shifted the election, if you will, the economy, et cetera. You would have thought so, but it didn't happen. You know, too many of them in too many different people's pockets. Yeah.
I mean,
but
wasn't
it all
such...
happened. One of the situations happened in the meeting at Stair Step. The other one at a church in North Minneapolis, New Salem. Mm-hmm. Took place. Anybody want a challenge next week about it? I'll be happy to listen to what they have to say, and then I'll
one,
start
one other
naming.
Question. How would one find out about these meetings? You know, I mean, are these meetings open to the community, or are these closed?
Well, it's the one at Stair Step.
And the nine
individuals. It's by selectivity. It's by selectivity. The one at New Salem was open to community per se, if you will, that's the way I'll have to put it. But the one was by selectivity based on affiliation and et cetera and et cetera. Good question, though, M. Good question. How do you get invited? Okay.
Just wondering.
You have to be on the right side of the aisle, whatever the hell that means, if you will. But hey, appreciate it, man. Look like we're getting ready to wrap up. I know Don's still there. We didn't hear anything from him here in the last couple of minutes. But
I'm here.
Any additional questions
like
you may have next week, M, feel free to give us a call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Yeah. No,
all right.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
About
1 minute?
Well, the bill, you know, he had touched on the Bill Cosby piece, and there's a lot of social media stuff going up with pictures of Bill Cosby and these white women around him, you know, way back, these in the 60s. And
there were a couple of black women,
And it's unfortunate that, you know, we as a race are the easiest to punish, easiest to incarcerate, and easiest to point fingers at. And I don't think personally there's some things that shouldn't happen, but I know that, you know, he's been through the court of law and all that and was charged with the crime, and he's in jail now. But, you know, we have to question the voice of our leadership. Where is the voice of our leadership in this country? I mean, I don't think this would have happened in 1960. I don't think this would have happened in the early 70s, but it has happened, and we don't really know the backstory too much on it, other than, you know, him drugging these women and having sex with them, and he was a star, and we don't know the motivation of the women. And I'm not taking anything away from any of the victims or alleged victims, but, I mean, there's a serious problem overall in society, I think, that needs to be addressed, because I think this is getting ridiculous. This is getting out of hand. And I'm not saying the Democrats are going to do any better, and the Republicans definitely aren't doing any better. So we're stuck here in this two-party system where it's easy to take someone out you don't like by an allegation, and it's unfortunate. But we seem to get the brunt of it, and Bill Cosby's in a crowded field, but he's the only one in jail. and he happens to
sure
be a black
man. Sure is. Isn't that amazing? I mean, the head of, what is it, CBS, he gets charged and et cetera, and then you find out that $100 million in compensation and separation pay had been already set aside for him. I mean, hey, you can't beat that. Bill Cosby, unfortunately, will die while in the penitentiary in Pennsylvania. His condition, he has diabetes, he's blind, and et cetera, 81 years old, he's not going to make it. But your point was well made, well taken. So we are the easiest race on the face of this, because there aren't that many Native Americans left. We're the easiest race to be punished and to be silent as we are punished. And by the way, let me just say this to all of those that are applauding what happened to Bill Cosby. I find it interesting that late into the process, one of the few African American women became "quote unquote" the spokesperson. I found that very interesting.
It was outsourced to black person.
And that's unfortunate.
All right, then, looks like we wrap it up, Don. So we'll see y'all next Saturday at 9:30.
Yep, thanks for listening. We'll be back 9:30 next Saturday. James Brown's going to take us away.
Put your bad stuff, bad night.